The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's been a long month, that's for sure. It's Friday the 27th, the last Friday of the month. We're going to talk to Dean Henderson up first tonight. Hello, Dean. How's everything in Missouri? Or is it Missouri? Or is it misery?
Depends on the day, and it depends who you're asking.
There you go.
The northern Missouri people call it Missouri, and southern call it Missouri, and I don't know why. I think it'd be the other way around, but the misery's over because the bug season's over and we're into the cool weather, so this is when it's nice here.
All right, now you just asked me a question here, and I'm going to ask you a question in return. The bug season's over. How was the bug season? I'm getting reports from England. 85% or more of the flying insects and bugs are gone. I'm getting reports from all over the country of greatly diminished bugs. Flying and otherwise. One person wrote, and he says, I guess he lives in a rural area and they have a farm light. And he said, every year as he grew up, he said, you couldn't even see the damn light bulb up there. There were so many bugs flying around the lamp. He said, now he might see 10 or 20. That's it.
Yeah. I've been hearing the same thing. All I can say is the rest of the world can come get some of ours because it's just plenty of bugs here.
No, good. I'm glad you're still normal in that respect.
Yeah, it's good, but it gets old by the end of summer. You know, it gets a lot.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I'd rather have them than mass extinction. So
they're in most places. They're down or damn near gone. And I'm speaking from experience here. There just aren't any.
Is that right?
Wow. No.
Any
lowercase a, I mean, you'll see them if you really look for them, but they're not flying around. They're not hanging around lights outside. They're not biting. I think I've seen two or three mosquitoes all summer. That's it.
Yeah.
And normally there are lots of them. So in case you don't know, this is a result of Fukushima radiation, getting into the ecosystem, and the insects certainly picked it up, and the birds, which eat insects, have paid a terrible price. There are no birds around here to speak of anymore at all. No songbirds, nothing.
Wow.
Bad. I mean, real bad. It's blatant. So, anyhow.
West Coast is probably the worst because it's the closest, I guess. Yeah.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, Dean, all those fires in Northern California. No one's thinking about it, but they burned up 6.5 years of accumulated radiation that was in the ground and in the plants, in the trees, in the park. That went up in the air.
That's right. And that's all airborne, too, heading towards
Missouri.
Not us. Yeah, I think it'll go north of us. Usually does, but we'll
probably
see.
Yeah.
We'll
all right.
See. But Yeah, well, that's why I live here. It is a good place. It's a healthy ecosystem, one of the few left, and not just in America, but I've been to 50 countries, and there's no better water than here, and we're just kind of isolated, and yeah, they think we're all dumb hillbillies, and that's just fine. Keep thinking that, because that'll keep the riffraff out.
Indeed.
That's what we want.
Yeah, indeed. Good for you.
So we're just a bunch of dummies here, man. We don't know shit.
That's right. Well, I'm not telling anybody, so let's keep that secret.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what's going on here? What's on your agenda here?
Well, I don't have an agenda, but there's a lot going on. I think the Kurdistan thing is the biggest thing. That's kind of, of course, I'm sure being reported by the corporate Illuminati media, but it's a big deal because, they did this referendum and everybody's supposed to feel sorry for the Kurds. It's always on the mainstream media how the long-suffering Kurds have, had it so bad.
Right.
Yeah, they're by far the highest standard of living in Iraq of anybody, way higher standard of living than any of the Arabs, and it's because they're crooks and they've been bought and sold by, not all of them, but Barzani and the PDK mainly, the Kurdish Democratic Party, the KDP, I'm sorry, and Barzani's old man, this is Masoud Barzani now, and Mustafa Barzani was the CIA's favorite go-to guy, and he's the guy that the Shah of Iran was funneling money to when they invaded Iraq and destabilized the al-Bakr government and then the al-Qassim government to communist governments in Iraq before Saddam killed them and became president. And it's a long relationship. Then they used Barzani in another situation when Iran had the revolution and they funded Saddam, and they worked with Barzani again, this time to invade Iran, they mess around with Turkey with the PKK, and they mess around with Iran, and they mess around. Now they're in Syria, the Peshmerga in Syria, going where the U.S. is bombing and taking over cities from ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a show because the U.S. never, ever fought ISIS until right at the end. They saw they were defeated by the Russians. So what's going on is they're using the Peshmerga now like they used ISIS, and they're having Peshmerga forces, Kurdish Peshmerga forces, take these areas that are being vacated by ISIS. And they're going to use them the same way, because what Barzani's been doing in Mosul with the Kirkuk oil field, and the reason it took so long to get them out of Mosul was all about Kirkuk oil, because the Kurds were taking all that money, and they were smuggling oil out, helping with the help of ISIS. It was going to Exxon.
They were smuggling just like ISIS was smuggling out of Syria.
Yeah, helping them smuggle, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so what we did is we trained the Peshmerga, armed them, made it look like, ooh, we're going to fight ISIS. But in fact, they were all along working with ISIS.
Uh-huh.
And we knew when ISIS went, we could move, push these guys in there. Of course, it's much better PR thing because they're not butchers and they're the long-suffering Kurds and da-da-da. So that storyline's been pushed, And so they had the referendum, and of course, 93% voted for it. It sounds good on paper, but the fact is, Kurdistan wouldn't last like a week without Iraq because they're landlocked. They don't have access all of a sudden to the Persian Gulf.
Right,
Turkey
right.
hates them.
Right.
Iran hates them. They're not going to trade with them, even not to mention open their borders and let them, drive trucks through and stuff on them to go anywhere. So that's not going to work. So, it was all just, it's not helping. In other words, the referendum, the whole thing was a Illuminati plan
showbiz
by the bankers, to lop off Kirkuk oil field and give it to the oil majors and keep it destabilized in the Middle East. Well, Iran, of course, saw this, closed their borders immediately once they got the referendum passed. Turkey saw this, and Iran met Turkey, had a joint meeting between Erdogan and the Iranian prime minister, made a big announcement in August that they were against it. Russia was against it. Iraq, of course, was against it. And everybody's against it. And we were just quiet. And the only country for it, Israel. So what's that tell you? So anyway, al-Abadi went in here last week, and they just militarily, after the referendum, went up there, and they just basically ran the Peshmerga out. They abandoned their positions immediately with no fight. And
I was going to ask you, it wasn't because I didn't read anything about big battles. They just melted away.
They just split. And with probably with help of Shiite militias backed by Iran, I imagine. And so it's a big deal. It's a big, and this is a big thing in the Middle East that, again, it isn't being reported. This is why the bond market, you're watching the yield go up, the dollar's been sinking, because there's a big realignment going on in the Middle East, and we lost is the main thing. Iraq is now allied with Russia, Iran, Turkey, which is new, and Turkey's broken away from NATO. They've broken away from the EU, basically. And Lebanon now, and not just Hezbollah part of Lebanon, but the whole country of Lebanon. So what you're seeing is a unification of all these countries that in the past have been divided by the Israelis, the Zionists, the Illuminati, whatever.
You mean Greater Israel could be in a little trouble?
Yeah, they're in trouble. They are in trouble because they were looking for the water, see, out of Kurdistan. That was their thing because they don't have any. And the Golan Heights, there's a little. That's why they seized it from Syria. Any mountains have water. That's gravity, okay? It just runs down the hill. Mm-hmm. And there's no mountains in Israel. So they seized the Golan Heights. They get a little there, and then they did all these pipeline deals with Turkey back when they were friends, which wasn't very long ago. They were friends for a long time. And they did
water pipelines?
From Central Asia, water pipelines from Central Asia, from up in the Himalayas. And now that's all kaput. So there you are in big trouble. And then you have Qatar really breaking away, it looks like, from the Gulf Cooperation Council, which is why Saudis, UAE, Egypt, on the orders, I'm sure, of the Zio bankers, are giving them a lot of trouble. And they're getting tighter with Iran as well. So Iran is really asserting itself as a regional power in the Middle East, what's going on. And not just Iran, but this alliance, like I say, of Arab countries. And
well, don't we have to include Russia certainly in the background there?
Definitely. Not really even in the background, right? But I mean, yeah, definitely. That's and of course, it's the Russians defeating ISIS that made all this possible.
Yes,
because,
sir.
Yeah. You know, if they don't defeat ISIS, Assad's gone, and the crosshairs turn to Iran next.
Right.
I mean, that was the Wolfowitz plan. You know,
that's
the
right.
Neocon's blueprint, and it didn't quite work out. So it's actually been a good news week for, you know, the people of the world in that area. And also, I'd say in Kenya, where the election, they tried to rig it, and it didn't work. And it looks like Uhuru Kenyatta will be reelected after, you know, they basically, he was elected once in September, Supreme Court, full of Freemasons from the old British Raj days. Overturned it, said, oh, it was no good, even though the Carter Center was there, even though the EU and the Commonwealth observers were there. In fact, John Kerry himself said it was a free and fair election. He headed the Carter Center, not that I really trust him, but he said it was a free and fair election. Of course, now he's not saying much anything, now that Kenyatta won. And see, they don't like Kenyatta because Jomo Kenyatta, his father, was, you know, he's a revolutionary. He's a guy that led the Mau Mau Rebellion, which ran the British out of Kenya.
Oh, that goes way back. That's interesting.
Way back. And he's basically the founding father of Kenya. And so this is his kid, Uhuru Kenyatta. And he does good stuff, you know, free health care, wants to empower women, wants to build infrastructure, and basically wants to assert, you know.
What's his name? Uhuru?
Uhuru, yeah.
What does Uhuru mean? It means something.
Yeah, and I think that is some kind of like a revolutionary battle cry word. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly
what
it means.
Let me look it up, because I think it means something better than that.
Because you always hear it in reggae tunes, you know. There's even a band called Black Uhuru that I like.
All right, spell it for me. U-H-U.
U-H-U-R-U, I think.
Uhuru. Couldn't be any simpler. We'll find out. Let's see what the magical internet has to say about it.
Yeah, the magical internet. There you go. Good.
The Uhuru movement is a socialist movement centered on the theory of African internationalism, which provides an historical material explanation for the social and economic conditions of African people. All right, that's it. Let me see. Uhuru means M-E-A-N. We'll find out what it means.
Yeah.
Uhuru, define. I know it means something interesting here. I just heard this the other day. Uhuru means freedom in Swahili.
There you go. I thought I knew it was something with freedom in Swahili. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, Swahili, for those that don't know, is the language of East Africa that's basically a hybrid between the. See, there's a lot of East Indians that settled in East Africa. That's why you get, especially in Tanzania and Zanzibar and that area. But it's a kind of a hybrid language. It's not really an African language. It's more of a East Indian African hybrid language, where the tribes drop their own languages and kind of start speaking Swahili so they could communicate with the East Indian traders. You know. So Uhuru, yeah, but socialism, Pan-Africanism, that makes sense, because, and that's of course what Gaddafi was leading, was this no notion that, you know, Africa had to unify. And well, basically that revolutionaries all over the world have to unify. And, I mean, that's what I'm all about, too. And so, you know, he's a good guy anyway. And they tried to run this Raila Odinga, and this guy was educated in Germany. He made his, I guess he used to smuggle, you know, like black market goods from West Berlin to East Berlin. And then he got busted trying to organize a coup against Daniel Arap Moi, who was Kenya's president for a long time. And also left-leaning, he took over for Jomo Kenyatta. And they tried to overthrow him in 82, so they put him under house arrest. So he's a business, you know, businessman, a wealthy businessman. So he's bad news, and he's like an IMF poster boy, and they wanted him in there so they could, you know, go in and undo everything Kenyatta's done, privatize the economy.
Nice central bank system.
Call it, you know. And so, yeah, a whole thing. So anyway, he, you know, so Odinga basically dropped out of the race. They did this, so the Supreme Court stepped in, just for those who haven't followed it, because I'm sure the mainstream hasn't reported it.
No, I haven't.
At all, but it's a big deal. And so, he won the election, 54% of the vote, back in September. Supreme Court, within a few days, Odinga makes a big stink about it. No, it wasn't fair, even though, like I said, there's all these observers that said it was fair. So the Supreme Court just steps in and just nullifies it, you know, and for no good reason, which is unprecedented. I don't know if that's ever happened anywhere in the world, really. And I'm sure loaded with British Freemason payoff people, which a lot of Supreme Courts are in the world, unfortunately. And so they just nullified it. So, okay, we'll have a rerun. But Kenyatta just kept his cool, kept his people cool. So don't get crazy, even though Odinga's people are getting crazy. And so Odinga just about a week ago just said he's dropping out. Because I guess they could see the writing on the wall that Kenyatta was going to win again. So he just dropped out. And then they said, oh, by the way, Odinga's party, the acronym for it is NASA. Just kind of interesting. And so
he
just...
Do you know what Kenyatta means? I'm teaching you all kinds of valuable things tonight. It means, according to the magical internet, musician. Uhuru, freedom, Kenyatta, musician. All right.
Nice. Yeah, so, cool. Well, so anyway, what Odinga drops out, and then yesterday, the election was yesterday. Day before that, Odinga says to his NASA party people, you know, boycott the election. Everybody should boycott. So they boycott the election, and then on election day, they send thugs out in the streets with machetes and start killing people. And of course, the Illuminati can say, oh, look at those savage Africans killing each other again. But actually, it's people being paid by the real savages in the city of London. And that's how they create racism. Ain't that cool?
Well, it's another tragic chapter in an endless series of tragic chapters in Africa.
Yeah.
Colonial Africa has never recovered.
The whole point is it's not Africans that do this. It's the colonial powers that pay people to do this shit. And that's the whole point. And that's, you know, in the media reports this Kenya election, like, oh, it's a tribal conflict. Those Africans, they're so tribal. They're so dumb. You know, they're just not as smart.
Well, when you own the media, you can play it any way you want, right?
Yeah, it's bullshit because they're way smarter than we are, A. And B, it's just always the British and the Israelis and these people in there causing trouble, just like in the Congo. Causing trouble. Why? Because that's where we get our precious rare earth metals for all of our laptops and our, you know, electronics and our cell phones and all this crap. You know, 5 million people in the Congo dead. But yeah, they just write it down as, oh, it's just those crazy African tribes, you know, at each other's throats. See, and it's all part of the stage managed, you know, thing that creates racism.
Let me ask you a question here. Annette, you're often a man with very innovative ideas. What should happen in South Africa? You got these pronouncements, and they're legitimate, that there are people there who want to kill all the whites. I understand the mechanics of the thought process, but you got 4 million whites, you got 40 million blacks, you got another 4 million who are mixed, and you got coloreds, you got a real polyglot there. So what happens to the whites, the Boers? They've been there 350 years. Where should they go? What should they do? What's the solution to this?
No, I mean, it's look, I've been there, okay? I've been to South Africa. And here's the thing. I mean, Boers have been there 350. you know, the Zulu's been there 40, 50,000, I don't know, as far as that goes, that part goes. But I got no beef with the Boers. The Boers fought the British. I mean, the problem is
they paid a terrible price.
And they paid a terrible price. They were put in the first concentration camps ever in the world by the British, who created concentration camps and torture and all kinds of savage things that the British created. But, you know, the thing is...
how do we solve this problem? This is a bad problem.
The Boers... See, the Boers, they don't like the British, but they don't like the blacks either. And this is just the way they divide people. And I never met one single Boer in South Africa who liked black people. And they were just openly racist. Okay, and if you're just going to be like that, it's going to be hard because the South African government, the minority apartheid South African government, you know, tortured. How many black people killed? How many? And by the way, I didn't hear from anyone. And by the way, I didn't hear from one single black in South Africa that they want to kill all the whites. So I just think that's more propaganda because we always have this.
Well, I hope it is, but it sounds pretty grim to me.
Don't just hope because it's true. And but I did hear from the Boers the most atrocious things and other South Africans about blacks. And I mean, we hitchhiked. Okay.
Yeah.
We were told by all these people, oh, I can't believe you're hitchhiking, and whatever. And we drove the public buses, and we were the only white people on the buses. And the black people would look at us, and they would just be shocked because no white people ever. And we were told over and over, don't ride the public buses. Well, we rode them anyway, and everything was fine. And once we established this rapport with the other people on that bus, which are all black, it was really cool. It was like breaking through. It was like finally they see these white people who aren't savages. We don't just want to kill every single one of them or put them to work on some plantation for a dollar a day.
Well, let me toss something else in here.
Accuse them of being savages.
Got it.
Accuse them of wanting to kill all white people because that's just ridiculous. It's just fear.
The true part of it is that there are South African farm murders, lots of them, going on. You've seen those. You know about those.
No, I don't. What are you talking about?
White farm families. I've been covering this for 15 years. White farm families have been murdered, raped, tortured by whom we don't know. They're blacks. We don't know who it is. We don't know. This is another governmental agency or an international agency. I don't know. But white farm families have been being butchered for the last 15 years since apartheid went away, basically.
This is a real deal. Who's reporting that?
I got pictures and videos and all that. It's all there. I'm looking for solutions here, and I don't.
Me too. That's why I want to know where you got the information.
Oh God, I've been covering it for 15.
Well, where does it come from? Because I know there's a lot of people.
Just do a search for white. Do a search for South African white farm family murders. Just do that, and then you'll see. You can check it. It's something that doesn't make the news here. At all.
I can tell you what happened in Zimbabwe, and the same thing was being reported. The fact is, Mugabe said, here's a bunch of money. We're going to buy your land from you, and we're going to resettle black people on it. And when they refused to do that, the white farmers took up arms and started slaughtering black people instead of doing that. And that's kind of the way that shook out.
Well, I remember that. All right, hold on. I got to take a break.
Now
we'll come
over. The opposite way, too.
All right, hang on. Be right back. I want to get back to this Iraq thing. I got a question about that. Just a minute. Dean and I'll continue. Hold on. Go back to Iraq and what was hoped to be for the in terms of the media, Kurdistan. Now that's the northern third of Iraq. There was a plan to divide, to chop Iraq into three pieces. That was Greater Israel's trend to keep them divided, divide, divide, divide. So Kurdistan in the north, the Iraqi military went in there and you indicate that there was no fighting. I didn't see any word of fighting. So they pretty well are in the process of reclaiming all of that area and making it, they're reincorporating it into Iraq, correct?
Yeah, they've pretty much got it, and there's a little bit of ISIS in Anbar province now that they're finishing off, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, is ISIS gonna go away if we stop supporting them? I think that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they're going to go away anyway, even if we continue to support them, because the Russians just kicked their butts. And now it's down to, like, we actually have to have this little theater where, you know, we bomb. And, of course, when we bomb, we're killing thousands of civilians, according to the Syrian government and the Russians. Just indiscriminate bombing the U.S.
It's horrific. It's a genocide. It's disgusting.
Genocide, you know. Yeah. But we're also staging it where the Peshmerga come in, and now see, we're trying to make them look like the good guys. Oh, the Peshmerga routed ISIS. Because we know they're finished. And so now the world has to love the Peshmerga. See? And these are bad guys and drug runners and CIA people for a long time. And so, yeah, they're trying to replace ISIS with Peshmerga is what they're doing, because that's their last really chance to destabilize in that region and keep the oil. It's all about Kirkuk oil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was three pieces. Yeah, the lower third was...
That's what they wanted.
...to drop that off because Basra, that's where the North Ramallah oil field is at. And
that's right.
And BP got a hold of that, British Petroleum, right? They got the contract. Our boys died. Guess who gets the contract? Not an American company, no, British Petroleum. So then... The middle, we were just going to let, you know, the Iraqis have that because there's not much there. Uh-huh. And then the north was going to go to ExxonMobil. Kirkuk Oilfield was supposed to go to ExxonMobil. Well, Al-Baraki, right. The first prime minister, you know, they brought him back from London. He was one of these wealthy Iraqis who fled the revolution and went to London with his millions of dollars and hid out after the king was deposed in, what was it, 56. So then Iraq nationalized their oil company, the first country in the world to do so, Iraqi National Petroleum Company, they call it. Kicked the oil companies out, cut them out of the deal. All the rich people fled to London. It's classic in a revolutionary situation. That's what always happens. They go to Europe. It's just, you know, what they do. So they thought they could count on Al-Maliki, so they brought him back, made him the, you know, Paul Bremer, the CPA, funny acronym, Coalition Provisional Authority, but funny acronym, CPA.
That is a funny acronym.
It was an accounting scheme.
That's
all Iraq was, you know, just another accounting scheme. And so he got disgusted with Bremer, and he said, well, this is kind of wacky, because they wanted to give Exxon like a 60% share of Kirkuk and give the Iraqis 40. So he said no. So this is in 2010. They got fed up with Maliki. They started they call it the Northern Offensive in Iraq. And that's where ISIS appeared on the scene. That's the first time you heard the word ISIS. And it was all about destabilizing Iraq and the Maliki government to get them to bend over and give Exxon the oil at favorable terms. Mm-hmm. So eventually he still didn't bend. They still wouldn't do it. So they started calling for Maliki's, you know, he should resign. You know, the U.S. called for his resignation. So in 2014, he did resign. Well, then they brought in this Al-Abadi, the new prime minister, Haider Al-Abadi. And this is another guy, millionaire, went and hit out in London, came back. They thought they could count on him, put him in there. Nope. Even though he offered half of the oil to the Kurds, you know, 50-50, wasn't enough. Because Barzani and Big Oil, who Barzani represents, wanted more. Hmm. And so Al-Abadi turned out not to be a reliable puppet either. And the reason for that, Jeff, is because Iraq is a long history of being a communist government. The people are communists. I mean, that's hard for Americans to swallow because, again, we're being told, oh, it's Shia versus
Sunni. We thought they were Muslims,
you know,
yeah.
It's tribal conflict, just as all this is a go-to thing, just like in the Kenya elections. It's the something tribe against the other tribe. And you know, it's never that, okay? That's just, they started that crap in Yugoslavia, Rwanda. They started playing that card. Do you know the Hutu and the Tutsi in Rwanda are exact same people? There's no ethnic physiological difference.
What was the trip then?
The Belgians liked the two. They would take the people from this very same tribe, and the tall ones they liked to be their butlers, you know, inside. And then the short ones they would like to work outside because they were short, but they were strong. They could cut wood and keep the fire going or whatever. So they started calling the inside people Tutsi.
This is 100 years ago, right? Colonial.
Well, yeah. Not even, but yeah, like what, 50, 40? And now Rwanda, in its healing from this genocide, it's general knowledge among the population. They've learned this now. There's no difference between us. This is a colonial construct, and this is why it's so important people to understand the history of Africa. It's not about Africans being dumb or Africans being, you know, shooting themselves in the foot. It's about multinational corporations and banks and kings and queens coming in there and deliberately creating these tribal chiefs, you know, elevating the weakest people. Think about what we do in our presidential elections. They do the same thing there. Just today, the vice president of Equatorial Guinea probably gets busted for all his corruption. Well, Equatorial Guinea, it's the biggest oil colony in West Africa now for Royal Dutch Shell and Chevron. You know, pick a country and look at the corruption, and you know, but it's just so important to people. So anyway, Rwanda, that's what happened. Then Yugoslavia, they said it was the Serbs. They said it was the Serbs versus the Croats versus the Bosnian Muslims. And again, just BS. It was capitalism versus socialism. Milosevic was a socialist, just like the Iraqis. He was making tractors. He was making Yugoslavian cars. The Yugo wasn't very good, but it was something. He was making something that competed against the big multinational corporations. They didn't like it. Iraq was making tractors. Iraq was making all kinds. They were trading. They didn't even exchange currency. They were just trading. Here's a Yugo, or here's a couple of Yugos. Here's an Iraqi tractor, you know? And it was just this barter system among the socialist bloc. Gaddafi was part of it. Iran was part of it. The Soviets were part of it before Reagan and the Vatican took down the wall with the CIA's help. That was another just lie. It's all a bunch of lies. So it basically, it's never like that. And okay, so back to Iraq, you know, they're just this tradition of just Communist Party is the popular party. And it's not Shia Sunni. It's just leftist people who want to be left alone, who want to have their own farms, their own businesses, their own government, sovereign government, instead of having these multinational corporations like Exxon come in, take Kirkuk, like BP come in, take North Ramallah. Nah, it's not going to cut it.
Or so, destroy the Gulf of Mexico. Don't forget
that. Yeah, exactly. Same thing. So it's like, yeah, and it's, so you know, they thought Malaki was going to be a puppet. They thought they could count him because he was a millionaire. He was part of the, you know, the club. They thought El Abadi was good. No. And it never, it's just like Saddam. They used Saddam to assassinate El-Bakr in 1965. He was, I can name his handler. I mean, it's 65. He was working for the CIA. So Saddam started out a bad guy, really right wing. I mean, he was sent in there to
communist
leaders, to assassinate the leftists, to assassinate people that were progressive. And then, well, he changed too, because this is how the Iraqi people are. They change their leaders to bend their will. They have to comply with the Iraqi people, and because it's just, I mean, the communists have like a 75-80% block of vote, and so they're smart, and they explain things, and there's not the corruption we have here because there's not the money we have here, and that the elite in Iraq, there's just a few. I mean, it's not like here where our whole Congress is run by millionaires and billionaires, you know, and it's just hardly anything you can do anymore. But over there, the people still have a voice. And, and so this is a really important victory for the Iraqis, because they are pretty much, and now the Shia militias in Iraq are, you know, Tillerson's over there threatening the Shia militias. Oh, you have to get out of Iraq. And
oh, they're trying to get them to all leave?
Yeah.
The diaspora? They want all the Shiites out.
Yeah.
So it's pure Sunni.
And so the Shia says, and because they're allied with Iran, but it's not just the Shia that are allied with Iran anymore. The Sunnis have come to see that this is all, again, they're all coming to see that this Shia-Sunni stuff is just made up. And it is.
Oh, they got conned.
There are different sections, but it'd be like turning Lutherans against the Methodists, Jeff. I mean,
what's the point?
Yeah. Well, there is no point, and there's no reason, for these people to be enemies, and they're waking up to that. See, they're waking up to the fact that this was all a construct, a neocolonial construct of the West to turn them against each other and steal their oil, and that's all it was. And so now they're getting together, they're unifying, so now the Sunnis are totally, and the Shias are all getting together, even a lot of Kurds. I mean, a lot of Kurds aren't going along with Barzani. Apparently, there's a whole faction of Kurds that are saying, no, we don't want to leave Iraq, you know. And they're starting to see it, and It's a really good thing, and this unity in the Middle East is a really good thing, because what it means is the whole thing's going to change, and that's why
Netanyahu is
they're toast.
Yeah,
they're toast. No, yeah. I mean, look, man, that's why I always say, you know, it's not over. There is hope. It's just not here. It's not in America. Not in cell phone zombie land. I mean, forget about it. We're done. We're done. We're going down. But we deserve to go down, and we will go down. And what's going to happen?
Well, wait, hold on. Let me offer something here. Yes, we deserve to go down, but when the sheep are dumbed down and then given this con job of all these smartphones, video games, Hollywood bull, I don't know that it's hard to hold them accountable when they've been actually tricked and programmed into
that.
This.
I get that. But on the other hand, man, it's just like, why do you think we're having these fires? Why do you think we're having these earthquakes? This is God saying, wake up, wake up, wake up. One more chance, one more chance, one more chance.
You know, we're running out of chances.
And if we don't wake up, Jeff, maybe we do deserve it. Because you know what? We can't sit here over here and say, you know, ha, 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 all Africans are stupid very much longer and get away with it. God doesn't like that. Creator doesn't like that. When you lie to the world, you lie to yourself, and you lie about the truth.
I've gone around and around with this thing. Do you blame the American people? I'm to the point now where I don't. So. I think the technology and the mind control and the food and the GMOs and the chemtrails, I think, and the cell phone tower grids, the EMF, I think most Americans have been just obliterated, and I really have trouble holding them accountable. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just have to. I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. And I mean.
I know you.
But on the other hand, everybody has to be accountable. I just believe that. That's
well,
a conservative
part. Well, on an individual basis, but in the larger sense, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. I get it. I get it. I know what you're saying. And it is. That's why I say it's. You know, we have a Congress run by billionaires, millionaires.
They're sickening. That's not
our
government.
Nothing we can do. I mean, I don't really believe there's anything we can do anymore to change the politics.
I agree with you. I'm on the same page.
You know, but so in other words, we have to count on the rest of the world to change it, and that by definition means that our standard of living is going to go down. You know, because we can't allow these millionaires and billionaires in Washington to just, and Lockheed Martin and just and big oil and just go rape the rest of the world, give them GMOs, spread their crap over there, spread their opioids over there. When one thing about Trump, good, he's
God, but you're going back to the British East India Company and it's opium and what they did to the Chinese, and that's 300 years ago.
Yeah,
sickening.
And they're still doing it, you know, through Afghanistan, and you know, so we can't allow it. So if we can't change it here, the only other option we have, if we're honorable people, is to watch this thing go down and hope that the Russians, the Iranians, the Iraqis can have a better life, and I really mean that. And I'll go down with it. I mean, hey, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to keep fighting for America. I'm going to keep fighting for my country. But I just don't have a lot of faith. Like I don't think it's going to happen.
Look at this, Dean.
I want justice for people. I want justice a little more because I have traveled so much and I've lived with poor people.
Well, you got a great perspective. Very few people have.
These are God's
people.
You know, you talk about hold people accountable. I mean, these people, despite their poverty, they're like the people that, hey, you come in their village, you know, here's my last chicken, you know, because they're accountable. To who? To themselves. Because they still have a conscience. They still have a moral compass. Mm-hmm. And so many Americans don't have that anymore. And I know why. I know the GMOs. I know the cell phone. I know all. I know why. But still, it's like you got
to
have.
Well, how do we? What I'm trying to do and what you try to do, I try to reinstill some basic idea of responsibility, accountability, and the idea that you don't have to be a victim.
You don't have to be a victim. Despite all this, I mean, look, me and you are talking in some sense, and we're subjected to cell phone towers and GMO foods, and I mean, we do our best, but we still are, and yet we're somehow able to have this conversation. So, look, I mean, but I don't wish that for me. I'm not like sitting there hoping that, but I'm just saying it's inevitable. It's history. It's going to happen, and if it doesn't happen, then those people over there have to put up with more bloodshed, more slaughter, more torture. And so if I have that choice of my standard of living going down or them actually getting to not be slaughtered by ISIS or slaughtered by the Peshmerga or slaughtered by Raylo Dingus Kenyan machete wielders, then I'll take my standard of living going down because that's my honor we're talking about.
You know, one of the saddest things of all to me, Dean, is that how the media and the international globalist elite have human life means nothing to these people. And it means less now. They don't even play the game anymore like it means anything. They just didn't even talk about it. They've degraded human life and humanity to the extent now that it's nothing more than grains of sand on a beach or tissues in a box. They don't care.
And then we've internalized that.
Exactly.
Most people have internalized that self-hatred, that self-loathing, that lack of dignity.
It's true.
Birthright that was robbed from us by the machines.
Yeah.
They
stole our morality. They stole our decency. Yep. They stole our accountability. Yep. And they stole our, you know the word, care. Yep. They stole our care.
Yeah.
Care.
You know where those fires were, you know, in California.
Yeah.
A Native American friend of mine told me that was the site of the biggest genocide against Native American people in the history of this country.
Really?
On the Sacramento River where they were, you know, the gold rush and all that stuff. And, of course, the Napa Valley, it's all these castles and really wealthy people. Hey, wake up, knock, knock, who's there? I mean, you know, it's a sign. That's why I say it's God. And it's like, okay, yeah, I get we're dumbed down and we're victims of this all this crap that they throw at us. But at some point, you know, man, people got to wake up. People got to see that, you know, there's a reason things are happening. There's a reason the West burned up. Why? Well, I lived in Montana for 10 years. I saw it happen. Gentrification, all these people moving in, running up the price of land to the point
where still
people
doing it.
Left.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then all these new laws and privatize this and the mining and everything going crazy and the clear cutting.
Hey, there's no question where
the fires were there in these huge clear cuts, man.
Yeah.
That's where, because then things burn hot, man. It's just a bunch of shrubs and then pine trees.
People don't understand. You know what that was? It's like a horizontal blowtorch and nobody gets it. I've seen many fires. Just no chance can you even get near them. You stand back and then you move in when it calms down. That's all you can do. Otherwise, you die. Horizontal blowtorch, 60, 70 mile an hour. Think about it. And then the flames, of course, are sucking up the oxygen, increasing the velocity of the movement.
Yeah.
So it's just bad. They are.
Plus,
they were super fires.
Plus, I wonder if there's something with the volcanic activity underneath the surface going on from Yellowstone, where that craton starts, all the way out to the plate, you know. And I don't know. I'd consider moving east a little bit, because I think there's going to be a big one, the way it looks to me.
The right word is, if the Cascadia Fault goes, and there's that huge thing off the coast, like 30 miles or something, they say there's going to be a tsunami that will basically work its way in and roll all the way to Interstate 5 before
it
stops.
Yeah.
That's a look at a map sometime. It's very interesting.
That's what I mean. Klamath Falls might be even just move over there, because I don't know. I'm telling you, there's rumbling and it's.
I can drive.
That's true. You can drive fast. Yeah.
I can drive 15 minutes and I can drive 15 minutes and get up to 8,000 feet.
Good. You're good. Yeah. Yeah. You're good. That's all you need to do. But keep your eyes open, because I mean, it, you know, I'm just saying there's going to be more of this and more of this, because I just feel like we're kind of in this wrath, you know, period, really, where God just had enough. And, you know, I do think there's hope for justice in this world, and I think it's going to happen, because I believe in Creator. I believe in Creator a lot more than I believe in the power of these little Illuminati punk-ass little bankers. I don't believe in them at all. I think they're weak, they're inbred, they're vulnerable.
They're cowards, crushed. You know?
That's
they really are. They're cowards.
Because God's on our side, and we have to always remember that, man, that the nature, the animals, the trees, the rocks, they're on our side. They're tired of this crap, too. Why do you think what's going on with the earth's going on? Because they're tired of this crap, too. They don't like it either, and it's just going to be this thing. And, you know, I'm starting to see people revving it up again, and I don't know. They better watch out. Iraq's just the harbinger. There's going to be a lot of, I think, victories coming up here. Around the world. And, you know, like I say, it's probably not going to happen here. But you just always got to remember to have an international view of things, I think, to have any kind of hope and faith in things, because, they got it sewed up here. This is where the Ark of the Covenant is hiding. This is the Messianic Republic. This is Babylon. This is the new Babylon. It's supposed to move east from here. We'll see. But right now, they got it sewed up here. And, my God, I mean, we got a billionaire in every cabinet position, I think, now.
And the majority of them are Zionist billionaires.
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of goes with Yeah, it's bad. And but there's still hope. And I think, you know, people just need to remember that and not be myopic and just look at U.S. politics.
We got to protect our freedom of speech. If we lose that, Dean, then hope is going to be hobbled and really in trouble.
Yeah. Keep talking. Keep saying exactly what you mean. And, you know, if people get mad or don't understand, well, you know, it's okay. Don't take it personal. But we just have to keep saying things that are true. The truth is being thrown under the bus, you know, in this country.
It is. It is. It's a commodity and it's being just frittered.
Yeah.
Look, the internet, unfortunately, is full of what they call trolls. Whatever you want to call them. They get thousands of people working the internet, cause trouble, start fights, libel, slander, defame people. Doesn't matter. They just want to stir it up.
Yeah,
divide,
yeah,
conquer,
yeah.
Same
division.
Thing. So, yeah, and they're lying and they're withdrawing more and more reality from people. It's not a good situation. We've got to fight our way through it. And I really can't even imagine a young person trying to wade into it and figure it out.
I know.
It's hard. We do our best.
I have a great deal of empathy, man, believe me, for people. I know it's just hard, and they're just being, at some point, man, we got to unplug. You know, the other thing about those fires, my mom told me this, she watches the mainstream news, and I don't. She said all the cell phone towers burned down in that Napa Valley fire, and nobody could talk to each other. And I was like, wow, all the cell phone towers burned down. Cool.
A real tragedy.
I'm telling you, man, if we don't get rid of this stuff, I don't think there's any hope, because it's just too much information. I mean, if you can sit down and have a conversation about history or something with the kid, but man, they're just being bombarded. It's just
constant.
click on the next thing.
Well,
click and their minds are
bad
just
news.
Exploding.
What is it? G5 is coming.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I know. Scary.
5G. I don't
5G.
know.
5G. Yeah, well, 5G. Yeah,
I've not good. I've read about that. Not
one.
Good.
Yeah.
Creepy stuff.
You know what? You're right. I saw some cell phone towers. You're telling me you saw these ones with these huge cables, and I'm starting to see around here with these huge cables.
Huge.
Like, wow.
Well, for what?
With that.
Yeah, they're running up enormous power up there. They're using them. They're using them. They're using them to control. That's what they're doing.
It is. It's all being in dark matter coming out of CERN, and who knows?
Who knows
what they're doing? They can
all
do anything.
Okay.
Get off it, people, and live in a real world. That's the best advice you can give to your kids, especially to your kids. But do it yourself, too. I mean, it's okay to use the internet as a tool. Me and Jeff do it. But, man, don't get hooked on that stuff, and don't sit there all day on that stupid thing.
Buy your 8-year-old kids' cell phones. Don't do it.
Chop wood, carry water.
Thanks, Dean. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too, Jeff. And,
okay.
You too, man. You too, brother. Take care.
Okay. Yeah, indeed.
Bye-bye.
Night. Mr. Dean Henderson, we will be back with hour number 2 right after this.